Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Everyone Talks to Liz. Okay, I'm not sure if I ever told you guys this, but I actually am one of five kids. I know that's totally crazy, right? Like, what were my parents thinking? But I'm so glad because they're all my best friends. Now, from oldest to youngest, it goes like this. Danielle, Holly, Shoshana, Liz, me, also known as the baby princess because there are four girls and I'm the youngest. And then my little brother, Brooke, who finally arrived, so we call him the Messiah. Okay, check this. Four of the five of us were born with red or reddish brown hair, but I by far had the brightest mop of red curls. And anyone who's a redhead, all of us are so used to being looked at either like exotic animals or weird humanoids because red hair is the rarest of all hair colors. But boy, was I teased in school. If you can generalize one thing about redheads, it's that most of us are really born feisty. But I never had a good comeback when people teased me. However, I always admired one fellow redhead, arguably the most famous redhead of all, second only to Raquel Welch, Scott Carrot Top Thompson, right? The wildly popular stand-up comic. Huge in Vegas, huge on TV. And he is that guy who just gets out there and fights right back into people's faces in a hilarious way. And boy, if anyone's a redhead, it's Carrot Top. He has an incredible backstory, and we thought, we got to put him in front of our Everyone Talks to Liz listeners. Because you know what? He grew up in Florida. He worked as a courier for a mortgage company in the late 80s, but he always wanted to be a comic. Once he became old enough to be sitting there looking at comics and thinking, I'm so fascinated by that. I want to welcome Scott Carrot Top Thompson to Everyone Talks to Liz. Scott Carrot Top Thompson. I mean, the wildly, it's you, right? The wildly popular stand-up comic.
You know, and just to start off, I worked on a movie with Raquel Welch. How great is that?
Seriously?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, called Chairman of the Board. She's a, she was a gorgeous and I mean, really unbelievably just beautiful. And she gave me, in the scene, she gives me a card because she's playing this lawyer and she says, call me. Ooh. And, I love the scenes, but I kept the card and I would tell everybody, you know, Raquel, I got Raquel Welch's number, which is, of course, not her number. It was just a fake prop for the movie, but I still have it, you know, framed as I got Raquel Welch's number. So,
am I right? Yeah, she's one of the most famous redheads of all time.
I mean, Lucille Ball, and I mean, there's a lot of, you know, famous red. I mean, I'm one for the younger comic generation, I guess, but. You know, and funny enough, your intro, you know, I mean, that's how I got into comedy is literally because I was picked on. I had to have what you said, a comeback. And so being in Florida, of all people, right, in Florida, where everyone's blonde hair and surfers.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm a blonde head freckled kid, like, you know, 100 pounds. And I hated it. I wanted to be a blonde surfer. I didn't want to be a redheaded, skinny, freckly guy. I just hated it. And so I used to take that like sun-in stuff. It was called sun-in, and you would bleach your hair kind of.
Oh, dude.
And I did it one time.
My mom
about killed me. Yeah, mine turned I already have red hair. It turned into like this horrible orangish, horrible thing. And my mom really wanted to kill me. She said, this is the best thing you have is your hair. You don't, you know, mess this, you know, with your hair. This is you.
Well, let me jump in there and rewind the clock a little bit because I have a million questions. First of all, what's your ethnic identity that you have the red hair? Because people always think I'm Irish, but I'm actually half Ukrainian, half Romanian.
Yeah, I have a little bit of Hungarian and English. Yeah, but it's funny. People always think the same thing. Oh, you're Irish, and they, you know, every Irish holiday. I'm like,
okay, British. That I understand. I've seen a lot of Brits with bright red hair, definitely. Growing up in Florida, okay, so I grew up in California. I too wanted to go the blonde.
Right.
That was never going to work
because
I have freckles and pale skin. Tell me about your folks, because I talk to a lot of comics whose parents are not funny. I mean, your dad was a NASA engineer. I mean, that's amazing.
But you know what? Behind that, he was funny. I mean, my dad really honestly had great timing. I mean, brilliant timing. He would just have, now he wasn't funny in general, but if he told a joke, you know, an old joke that he'd heard at work and told, you know, around the neighborhood or with all the other dads, my dad had impeccable timing and he could nail the punchline. But in general, no, my dad was not funny. He wouldn't walk around telling jokes. And I really wasn't. I was a really quiet kid. And when I decided to get into, I don't even know how, I was watching, you know, I was always watching TV as a kid, and I just thought comedy was just amazing. But I didn't think I could do that for a living. I just thought, that's cool. Like, how do you even become a comedian kind of thing?
I know that your mom, when you were a kid, took you to Las Vegas. And who did you see there who inspired you and planted the seed, one day I'll get to Vegas?
Charo was the opening act, by the way. Charo came out and like, you know, coochie, coochie, goo, and she danced and, you know, I was like 14 or 15. She like rubbed on me and it was like the creepiest thing. And then Rich Little was the headliner.
Oh.
And I remember watching Rich Little on The Tonight Show. So here I am watching him in a live venue in Las Vegas. And I didn't even think about Vegas. I just thought, that's not where anyone, I mean, that's where real, you know, big time celebrities go play Vegas. You don't play Vegas. So I didn't think about it. So to fast forward a little bit to kind of know how exactly I got right into it, I had just started college and I had left to, and I got a job delivering bank reports. And so I would drive after school, I'd drive in the afternoon down to from Boca Raton all the way down to Jupiter and back. And while I did that journey, I would listen to talk radio. And so I really got into talk radio, and every day they'd have the 5 o'clock funnies with, you know, the Comedy Corner on 2000 Dixie Highway in West Palm Beach. And they would have this every day, this little ad and this promo. And finally I said, I'm going to go down to that club one day. So I went down, I found, and I just sat in the back and watched. It was like Jeff Foxworthy and someone else. And I just watched and I was amazed. And I thought, you know, I went back one other time. And I believe it might have been Seinfeld. It was, I walked up to the lady and I said, I saw a poster for a contest. What do you have to do to be in the contest? And she said, well, you know, do your act. And I said, oh, she said, do you want to be in it? And I said, well, I don't really have an act yet, but I think, you know, if I do develop one, you know, what do I do? And she said, you know, come down and audition. So I went back to the college and they had like an open mic and I went up and I did a couple things and that's where I came up with the name Carrot Top. And I used to have, you know, it was a dumb opening, but it worked. So I had this big orange wig and the guy would announce me, please welcome Carrot Top. And I'd walk on stage with this big orange afro and everybody would kind of laugh and then I'd pull it off and then underneath it was my big red afro. So it was, you know, it was funny and then not funny, right? So that's where Carrot Top kind of started. And then I did all these jokes that were really strictly about the you know, the school and college and that, because that's what, you know, talking everything that for college oriented, it would kill. And so I finally got just enough minutes to go down to audition. So I went down to the woman and I said, I want to audition. And she said, okay, great. I just started doing my stuff. And she stopped me at like midway through. And she said, where do you perform this at? And I said, at the college, FAU. And she said, you got something very funny, but your material is not going to be, it's not generalized for, you know, for this club. I mean, of course it worked at college because you're talking about college things. Can you kind of come up with a more generalized material based stuff for, you know, a general audience? And I said, I'll try. I don't know why my head thought this, but I was driving every day in Florida. And then, you know, the normal joke in Florida is that there's old people. And you can't see their heads above the seat when they drive.
And I mean, the steering
like
wheel, sure.
Right. So I thought, okay, there's an idea. So I got this baseball cap, literally, and I put this mannequin head on it. And I wore it on my head, and the mannequin head would be on top of the hat, like, you know, above. So when I said, I made this for old people to wear when they drive so you can see their heads when they're driving. And it was just, it was like just perfect for like Florida. So I had two, they were both props and visual. And then I just, my brain started thinking more visually. So I just started coming up with more and more ideas with a high heel for women that had training wheels on it, on the back. And I had a cowboy boot with a kickstand so drunks wouldn't fall down. So I just started building all these props. And I went down and I auditioned for her. And she was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
It sounds like you were an original, and a lot of people weren't doing what you were doing.
Yeah, no, and, no, there wasn't.
And your first debut in front of an actual audience, how nervous were you? What did you do to get over that? And what was it like once you got off the stage?
Well, it was brilliant once I got done. I think going on the very first time, of course, you're like anybody's just terrified as to, but I don't know. I think from day one, I had something in me that I wanted to perform. I mean, I'm nervous, you know, I was nervous too, but, but I think the first laugh that I got, you know, you kind of put you into a little rhythm and then you're doing good. And then you get done and you're like, oh my God, that was so much fun. And you know, you want to do it again.
When was the first time you realized I need to not do this marketing thing or whatever legit or so-called real job path, and I need to go all in on stand-up comedy?
Yeah, that's, well, the year was 1985 when I started doing, you know, performing more and more and more. And I say the shows, but they weren't ones that necessarily I got paid yet for. So there were a lot of contests and I would win. And I'm not kidding you. Every time you win this contest, it was like twice a week they'd have these contests. The prize was a Walkman. If you're old enough to remember
Sony.
A Walkman, right?
Sure.
A Sony Walkman. So I had like 30 Walkmans, right? So I was giving these things away to my friends. Like, why are you giving me a Walkman? I'm like, because I've got like 30 of them. I keep winning this contest. And then I would make a joke. I said, can you run with a Walkman? I mean, so I always had, you know, it's fun that I won it because then I came up with a joke. But I had finally gotten so many, you know, things that finally one day I got a friend that said, you want to do this show? And it was in Jacksonville or something. And I said, yeah. And he said, it pays like $200. And I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? Because I had never gotten paid to do comedy. So, I took the gig and we went down to a bar and I did it and I got $200. And I was like, oh my God, I called the guy and I said, do you have any more of these? And slowly I would get, you know, like just literally, I still have my calendars in my office that from all the way back to those years where I wrote in all my bookings, you know, so I could fill up the week and try to fill. And then I had an open week and then I'd get one gig and then I'd have, you know, 3 weeks off and then one gig that might pay the rest of my bills. And so it was definitely a journey.
But I think it's always really important, Scott, to let people know that the line to success is not necessarily a straight one.
My story is so interesting because it starts out like that. I'm doing really well and then I couldn't get gigs together. I couldn't figure out a way to do it. So I just got out and I started shucking oysters.
Really?
And yeah. And so I'm shucking oysters in Orlando, Florida. And I've got three roommates. We're living in this condo and I would shuck oysters and I hated it, but it was entertaining people. I was behind the bar, you know, doing my shtick and joking and you know, shucking oysters at the same time. And I'm in there one night, and there's these two couples, and they're just looking at me, and I'm shucking oysters, and they said, "Do you have a twin?" And I said, "God, I hope not." And they said, "No, you have to have a twin. He's in Tampa. He's unbelievable. He goes by Carrot Top. We just saw his show. I don't know. When did we see him?" And they're looking at me. He said, "You are exactly like him. He was the funniest guy we've ever seen. He goes by Carrot Top." And I just looked at him and I thought, oh my goodness. And so I went home that night and I kind of got all my stuff back out and I started trying to think. And I called my friend up and I said, "Is there any way you have any other gigs?" And he said, "Yeah, I've got one on New Year's Eve." And I said, "Well, I can't do it. I just was going to try to get me to slowly. I can't do a show. I haven't done a show in a year." He said, no. It's a whole, so you get, you know, it's $1,000 or something for New Year's Eve and you're the headliner." I said, "No, I haven't performed in a year. I can't be the headliner. I'll go and do like a little thing just to get my feet wet." And he said, "No, you're doing the whole show."
Wow.
And so I went and I went back after a year off and I went back and I did that one show. And then somehow I kept stringing together more and more gigs, and then I moved to Charlotte, and there was a guy that owned a whole bunch of clubs in the South, and so basically when I signed on with them, I had, you know, 2 years of work, and then after the club thing, I was doing so well in the clubs, they had this thing called, now this is where I think I owe my whole career to, the NACA, and it's called the National Association of College Activities.
Okay.
So I went on a showcase once, and it was like a regional showcase, and I did so good. I picked up like 50 colleges. And then they said, you're invited to the national convention in Dallas. And this is the big deal. Every college goes to this thing, and they send their people, and you showcase, and then they buy you or don't buy you. And so I went up, and I, you know, God bless, I don't know what it was, but I went up and I had probably the best 15 minutes that I've ever done in front of this entire 10,000 seat, you know, all these buyers from colleges. And I came off and it was like, you just broke Harry Chapin's record. And I was like, Harry Chapin's record of what? He said, you got like 3,000 colleges booked you.
Whoa.
So I'm like, what? And they said, yeah, you're booked for 5 years. And I swear in my life, I did colleges longer than 5 years, but I would do like a cafeteria in the morning, and then I would drive my car and go do the arena at night, or and then do a cap. I swear to God, or a hallway or breezeway, and then at night I'm in the theater, and I did that forever.
We're not done yet. We'll be back in a moment.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
So when did you get asked to do the Holy Grail television?
It was a big show in California. It was called Comic Strip Live. It was on Fox, and everyone was doing it. Like big names, you know, and I was like, wow. And they said, you want to do it? I sent my tape, and they approved it. And I went in, you know, this is again, now this is kind of going back to, maybe your listeners might enjoy this. So, you know, never been in a TV show, but I've been playing in front of audiences, and I mean, big ones, you know, anything from 10,000 people to 50 people to 20 people. So I get to this, it's just a comedy club. So it's the actual size of the room, it didn't freaked me out. And there was, you know, television cameras and wires and, you know, studio thing. And it had an energy about it because it was a TV show. So it just made it more nerve wracking. But I remember literally talking in my head to myself. I said, do this like you just do any other show.
Yes.
Just forget it's a TV show.
Yes.
Forget there's cameras. Yeah. But this is, you know, when I was, you know, 20 some years old, and I had the smarts in my head to think, don't go up there and they just, it's a comedy club. It's Tuesday night. We just did in Charlotte. And so I did, I went up there with the attitude, like, I don't care. It's a TV show. Just do your normal thing. And I killed, and it was great. And it was such a great, you know, oh my God, now I've done television. And I went, and I have a unique look. And so the next day I literally went somewhere. I went to go get lunch with a friend. It was the next day. And I sat down in this little diner, and this guy's like, are you Carrot Top? And I said, yeah. And he said, that was great last night. And I thought maybe he'd see me. I've been doing, you know, comedy on the road for you. Maybe he saw me in Dallas or something. But he said, no, I saw you in TV. And I said, and my friend looked at me. He's like, oh my God. And I'm like, that was my first, like, you know, oh my God, someone recognized me, you know, from being on television. So then I did, I mean, literally almost every day until I did another TV show, people were like, are you that comedian guy? And so
see?
I kept thinking, oh my God, this is weird. But back then it's exciting. You're like, yes. Oh my God, people recognize. And then they got, of course, then back in my day, they had all these comedy shows on TV that would showcase comics, from Comic Strip Live to Sunday Comics to Evening at the Improv. They wrote Sunday Comic. I mean, it went on forever. There was like 20 different TV station shows that you could get on. And if you got on one, usually you would get on the other because they, you know, you did good on there, and they want you to do good on there. So I did, you know, every comedy show known to mankind that was out there. Then I got the national one on Sunday Comics, which was the big one after on Fox. It was primetime. It was at 9 o'clock. So to do that show was like, I mean, only the Seinfelds and the Foxworthies and the big names were doing it. So I did it, and I did great on it. And I remember I might have flown back to Charlotte. And I landed, and my manager at the time said, Leno called. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And they said, no, they want you on like Friday. And I was like, this Friday? And they're like, yeah. And I walked in on the studio and I walked up. Jay was standing there and he shook my hand. He said, thanks for doing this. And it was just, it was the most surreal thing in the world because this is the show, the blue seats. And I looked down and there's that gold star that Johnny Carson would stand on every night and do the monologue and the curtains behind you. And I kind of had a little panic attack. Right. So anyway, I did it. And I got done. I sat down with Jay and it was like my first Tonight Show. And then that was the first time I think I legitimately said to like myself that I think I'm in stand-up comedy.
Oh.
Even prior to all that, I wasn't in show business. I was just doing comedy on the roads and stuff. But to be on television and to be, you know, seen by, you know, the world, it was
huge was just deal.
It was when you kind of think, you know, I think I'm doing this now for a living. I'm not going to try to look for a job in marketing. So I'm doing all these TV shows and I'm doing Regis and Kathy Lee. And I was a regular on that show and I did so Regis, God bless him. He loved me like just weird. Like just, he was just fascinated with my, how I come up with it. How do you come up with this stuff? He would just,
he would just
go crazy. And I would say, you know, I don't know. And how did you come up? And he'd tell the crowd, look at this. He comes up with all this himself. So I get done and I'm literally getting done. I'm packing up all my stuff. And this guy walks over to me and says, that was phenomenal. And I said, thank you. And he said, you must kill in Vegas, I bet. And I said, oh my God, that's funny. I said, no, I've never been to Vegas. And he said, you've never been to Vegas? And I said, no, you've never played Vegas. And I said, no. He says, you are Vegas. And I said, oh, well. And he said, if I can book you in Vegas, will you take the gig? And I said, well, of course. And the guy calls me, I don't know, my manager, I guess, a week later. And it, by the way, it was Kathy Lee Gifford's manager. So he comes up and he calls and he says, I got you a gig at Bally's. And now this is Vegas. This is Bally's showroom. It's where they had the showgirls and the thing. And the stage is as big as as big as the hotel. It's huge.
Huge.
And I have these two little prop trunks on this stupid stage, right? And I'm like, I look like an idiot. I didn't even think that, you know what, you know, George Carlin just stands there with a mic. I didn't think about that, but I just felt naked. So I went down to Walmart and I bought all these tables and tapestries and lava lamps. And I went to a thrift store and I bought a couch and like a sofa. I'm not making this up. And a big rug. And I made like a set.
Okay.
So it filled up the stage, right? So I had like a set. It looked like a little hippie set or a little house. The rug and the chairs. And then I put my two prop trunks and they had lamps. So it almost looked like a sitcom. So I felt more comfortable on that stage because it was just so naked and so bare. And I did the first, I don't know, it was a night or two. And they said, you know, we want to book you more. And I said, well, I still have other obligations. I can't just take Vegas. And then we got a call from the MGM Grand. And the MGM Grand said, we want Carrot Top.
Ooh.
And so we went to the MGM Grand and we started doing like in and out, like 3 weeks at a time. And then I'd go on the road and then come back and do 3 weeks like 3 months on the road, come back, do 3 weeks in Vegas, go back on the road, back. And I did this for a couple of years and finally said, no, we want you full time. And then you just start thinking, my God, this, you know, don't screw this up. Right. So it was about 10 years of doing the MGM like that. And then David Copperfield one day decided he wanted the room permanently. And so they came to me and they said, listen, I hate to tell you this, but we got to move you. And I was like, oh no, I was getting fired. They said, no, we don't want to fire you. We just have to find a different place for you because David Copperfield wants to come in and take over the room full time. So, of course, the newspaper called, why did you leave? And I said, well, David Copperfield made me disappear. And, of course, I got a laugh. I got a laugh from him. He's like, I didn't make you disappear. I said, in a sense, you did. So they went to the Luxor calls. So they're still MGM Grand property.
Sure.
So we went over there and checked out the Luxor room. And it was this groovy little room that's like a stadium seating it holds, you know, close to 500 people. It's like intimate. It's great. So we took it with the thought of maybe we'll try to see if we can just play with it, you know. He said, we got to do a year at least. And I said, well, I'll just do like 6 months. I don't want to commit to this. And we did a year. And they asked me if I'd do more, and I was reluctant. And I said, I don't think so. I think I'm going to go back on the road because I'm a road guy. And then somehow my brain was like, okay, I'll give you another year. And they said, well, we want to do like, you know, 2 more years. Like, and I said, I'm not signing a 2-year deal. And I signed a 2-year deal. And then they got done with the 2-year deal. And like, we want to sign you for 3. So I said, okay. And then we did the 3-year deal. And then the next time we came back, they said, we want to do 5 years. And so it just kept continuing. And now we just re-signed, I don't know, 2 weeks ago for 5 more.
Oh, Mazel Tov. That's fantastic.
It's our 18th year at the Luxor, 18 years. And so I've been very blessed in that regard. Where I don't, you know, I've been going and going and doing this, but not a lot of my friends who are even funnier than me get that chance. So I'm very lucky.
Do you live in Vegas now?
I do. I mean, I live in Florida and Vegas. I have my house in Orlando. I still keep there, and when I get breaks, I go back home, and then I have a house here in Vegas.
Are you still close with your folks?
Well, my father passed away a few years back, but my mom lives in Vegas, yeah, and she's my biggest fan. She's not even that far from where I live, and so speaking of Regis and Kathy Lee, I'm doing the new show, whatever it's called, Kelly and Mark.
Yeah.
I'm doing that on Monday here in Las Vegas, and my mom is going to be in the crowd watching it. So it'll be really fun because she was there the very first show that I went up on, and she was there the very first show that I did back in for the New Year's Eve show. She was there and witnessed the whole thing. So
how important is it to have a cheerleader in your life like your mom?
Oh, it's nothing like it. I mean, to have the support. I mean, you know, my dad towards the end was very supportive. In fact, he called himself Pop Top at the end. But in the beginning, of course, you know, they were all, I wouldn't say they weren't, you know, behind me in the sense of, you know, when they just were worried, you know, they're like, you're going to do what? And, you know, my dad would say, but you're not even funny. Like, I wasn't a funny kid. I wasn't funny around my father. I was just, you know, I was just a quiet kid. And then all of a sudden I got in to do this job. My dad would see me on TV and he's like, my God, where did you become this character? And I said, no, it's just me, Dad. It's just me with a little more energy. But yes, it's always great to have the people that support you. I mean, from day one, all the way from my friends to my family that have always had my back and, you know, supported me.
Who do you admire? Which comic do you look up to the most? You've mentioned George Carlin a lot. Anybody else?
Well, there's a lot of them. George Carlin's probably the number one as far as that. But there's so many comics. There's hundreds of comics that make me laugh and that I admire. I mean, I definitely admire the ones that you know, always work hard. That really, you know, I'm going to be in with Jim Gaffigan. I think he's a brilliant comic.
Hilarious.
And he writes jokes all the time and he keeps it fresh. And of course, Jerry Seinfeld is probably one of the best stand-up comics there's ever been on this planet. He's no comic watches him and doesn't think I should just get out of the business. He's that good. everybody from, you know, Billy Crystal to Gary Shandling to, you know, Robin Williams to Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor. I mean, Chris Rock's a good friend of mine. There's so many comics that just have, and what I love about it, and I always tell people this when people give me grief about being me or they don't like my particular style of comedy, I always say, you know, there's 30 other different, 40 different other kinds. You don't have to. You can go watch Dennis Miller if you want to, or Bill Maher if you want to watch political humor. If you want to watch something silly and fun, you can come see me.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we'll be right back. So when I think about you, and I think about you on stage and your incredibly distinctive brand of humor, and then your look, it all comes together, and no one is like you. What is your advice to people listening who might have dreamed of being a stand-up comic or an actor, but think, you know, there's nothing about me that really stands out, but I have this dream?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I don't necessarily believe, and that's coming from me, that you just said, all the things that I have, you're right. It's kind of interesting because I have all the three things. The act is definitely different, unique. My look is totally different and unique. But I think I don't know if necessarily, if you want to be an actor or a comic, that you necessarily need to have something. Oh, I'm going to make this, you know, spiky hair or whatever. I don't necessarily think that you need like a thing. It's the personal style, I think, that is important. And it has to be something that really is you, that's not generated to, like, comedy and acting is all about real. You got to be real. And if you're not real, they're going to see right through it. You know, my look at all that, I've dressed like this since I was a kid. So people are like, oh, you thing, and you look, you know, you have the baggy pants and the torn t-shirt. I'm like, yeah. And I've dressed like this since I was 12. I mean, I literally, all my friends and my mother knows that I never changed my style. I've always had, you know, my moppy hair. I always wore makeup. You know, I always had some little bit of sparkle on, like a little glittery something.
It's really important to be authentic, and I think you'd agree with that.
Well, actually, more importantly than the actual look, I would like to share this, because I think when young comics ask me advice, which is funny because now I'm old, so I'm the old guy they ask advice for. The advice I normally give them, I wouldn't say get something crazy to wear on stage, because that does nothing. It's what you're going to do on stage is what's the most important thing, because right? Because when you think about it, when they mention your name, and you go up there. It's not what you're wearing. It's what you're going to do. The crowd could give a crap about what you're wearing, usually. Mm-hmm. It's about what, you know, if Elton John wore that big bird suit but didn't have any music to back it up, they'd boo him off the stage. So, you know, you've got to have something that ready, prepared. And that's usually what I tell comics is what's going to be your message. Are you going to talk about politics? Are you going to talk about observational? Are you talking about your family? Are you going to talk about self-deprecating you? I mean, there's a whole bunch of the variables that have to go into,
of course,
you know, being that person you are that people go see at night. Like, I think when people come see me, they know what a Carrot Top show is going to, well, some probably don't. Some don't know. They come and they go, okay.
So Scott, yes. As we finish up, I am just blown away by your energy. It's almost as if you're jumping through the microphone into people's cars or wherever they're listening right now, if they're working out or jogging, because we have a lot of listeners who love this kind of stuff. What's your final message about you and where you plan to go in the future?
Well, you know, I always love that question because especially in this, well, not every business really, is I don't think really people have. You know, I can ask you and probably be the same thing. Like, I don't really know. I mean, you just don't know the future. That's what makes it so interesting.
True.
You know, tomorrow I could get called and be in a Spielberg movie. I mean, literally, you just don't know. You know, 10 days ago, I wasn't going to be in Kelly and Mark's show here. That just happened. So I just did a movie that, you know, just came out of the blue. They just asked if I'd be in a movie. So you just got to have to, just run with it and go with it. And the advice that I got from a comic, oh my God, years ago. And I have it framed and I think what's great about it, he wrote it on a napkin. Buddy Hackett. And Buddy Hackett was in a airport bar. And I've always done this. When I see a comic, especially a legendary comic, I never want to bother him. I just look and I stare and I go, oh my God, that's Buddy Hackett. And this time I thought, you know what? I'm just going to go over and say hi. This is before we had cell phones and all that. So I just walked over. He was sitting by himself. And I said, I don't want to bother you, Mr. Hackett, but I'm a young comic. And I just wanted to say, you know, you're brilliant. And thanks for getting, you know, a pathway for all of us comics. And he said, oh, what's your name? And I said, Carrot Top. And he said, Carrot Top. And I said, yeah. He said, what the hell is a Carrot Top? I said, that's my stage name. And he goes, okay. And he says, I'm going to give you some advice. And I said, change my name? And he goes, no, keep your Carrot Top. But I'm going to give you some advice. In fact, I'm going to write it on a napkin. And he wrote it on a napkin, and it's framed in my house. It says, the key to the treasure is the treasure. And I broke it down forever trying to figure out what the heck he meant. And what I think he means by that, the key to the treasure, the key to this success, the key to life, the key to happiness, the key to all that treasure.
Yeah.
Is that so? The whole key to this thing is it. The whole key to life is right now. It's you're in the treasure,
existing right now, the moment.
Yeah, That's why I broke it down. I'm thinking that's probably close to what it meant, but I just cherished it. I always think, you know, the key to the treasure is the treasure. And it could have just been messing with me drunk and said, oh, that kid just popped my message down the napkin. But I think that just kind of subtly says it all. You know, the key to life is life. You're in life right now. The whole key to it is right now.
And it's not a dress rehearsal. That's a cliche. But guys, if you're listening and you're thinking, wow, he did it, I'd love to. You have to seize this moment because this is all we've got. Scott, what a great, great conversation. Thank you much. Good luck at the Luxor, although you're 18th year. You don't need my luck.
No, we always need luck, you know, and we also always need love and luck. And you gave me a lot of love on the show and your listeners. If they've listened to this for this hour, I hope they got something from it. And it was really a pleasure telling the story.
Am I right? Right? Does his energy just explode through the airwaves? That is a perfect case of somebody who maybe was a quiet kid, but engendered and built up this volcano within him, this molten core, yes, red hot. And he just reached for the stars and he snagged them. I love that you guys tune in to hear these stories. And I love you. I really do. You know, no matter what hair color you have or if you're bald, we love you all. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to see you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Claim and Countdown. Come check out my red hair. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.